so glad you could join us today for Women in Politics March episode. I am Dhanvi Shah, and with me is my co-host, Andrea Montenegro. Today, we're going to be discussing the role of women in politics in honor of Women's History Month with our very special guest, Nancy Love. She served on multiple campaigns and has an extensive political background. We are so honored to have her on here today. So, Nancy, can you introduce yourself a little bit?
Yeah, of course. I am Nancy Love. I use she, her, hers pronouns. And yeah, my political background started in college, actually back in the 2016 presidential primary. I became aware of how much political change that we could inflict, especially our generations. So I dove head first. I switched my major to political science, minored in women's and gender studies. I did an internship with a New Jersey Assemblyman, Jerry Green. I also ran for school board in New Brunswick, where I was going to college to better school conditions for children in the district. I then went on to intern for New Jersey Working Families to organize on statewide pressure campaigns and progressive primaries like Fight for 15, which we ultimately were successful with. I also organized a rally to demand the removal of judges who mishandled sexual assault cases in New Jersey. And we actually were pretty successful on that front. After that, I went on to work as a campus organizer for the Bernie Sanders campaign, the first unionized presidential campaign in US history. And after that, I briefly worked with the North Carolina Democratic Party, and I co-led a movement to unionize that workforce, and we were successful with unionizing the workforce with Campaign Workers Guild. I then went on to become the deputy field director for the John Cain for State Senate campaign. And we were one of the few campaigns countrywide to flip a seat that was held by Republican incumbents. So we flipped the state Senate seats that was held by the Republican Party since the 19th century with a field margin of 3.9%. I then was invited by John Cain to become his director of constituent services. So today I serve the constituents of Pennsylvania State Senate District 9, and I'm so excited for the future.
That is amazing. Nancy, your political history is nothing short of just extraordinary. And I think you're just getting started, right? Is would that be correct to say?
Yeah. I got into politics because I wanted to make the world a better place. I know that sounds cheesy, but I do hope eventually that I can enact change on a national level.
And you've had political experience through being like a candidate and working on campaigns, and now you're even working in a political office. So I think that's just really cool how multifaceted your experience in politics has been.
Thank you so much.
Can you tell us a little bit more about, obviously you got your start in college, but being a lead organizer for rallies, to remove judges that had mishandled sexual assault cases. That feels like, you know, the very start to me for you, and you said it yourself. So can you tell me more about how you started getting involved in this whole movement to remove these judges?
Yeah. So it all started when I woke up one morning and I read a headline that a New Jersey judge cited an alleged perpetrator's good family, and he was essentially like defending the perpetrator while kind of diminishing the survivor. And I just felt like this like ball of rage inside me, and I knew I had to do something. So I reached out to a fellow activist that I knew of, and she kind of like walked me through the steps of how to organize a rally. I reached out to different women's organizations, like Manavi, which is a South Asian women's organization. I've reached out to Now New Jersey, as well as the executive director of New Jersey CASA. I actually was able to get Van Gopal, who is a prominent New Jersey state senator, to get on board. It all was put together in a few days, and I feel like because of the rally that we organized, because it was such a national, it was grabbed the national attention. There are a lot of national media outlets that were covering it, and we were able to have a really great rally in front of the Monmouth County Courthouse. And a week after, one of the judges, Judge Troiano, resigned from the bench, and the Supreme Court of New Jersey announced mandatory training for judges in the areas of sexual assault, domestic violence, implicit bias, and diversity. I should have mentioned this prior, but one of our demands, along with Judge Troiano from being removed from the bench, was to institute this mandatory training, because judges should be trained on areas like sexual assault, domestic violence, implicit bias, and diversity.
That is really incredible. It is such an admirable goal of yours to get into public service because of, what's happening recently. I mean, I would say that stuff like this has been happening for the longest time, but it's really come into light more recently, right? So I think that's very admirable. Thank you for sharing that.
And I think
something
that we can take from this is, Nancy, what did you want to do before getting politically involved with these rallies and obviously interning?
I wasn't sure. I was one of the college students who kept changing her mind. I wanted to be an English major, and then I was exploring so many different courses, and then I thought I was going to be actually an occupational therapist, being able to help patients like one at a time. But then I saw that by getting involved in politics, you can help like mass of people. You can help communities of people. So that's why I decided to go into politics.
Right, and it's like it's something I think a lot of us don't think about now, because personally, like, I want to go into medicine. Domvi wants to go into business, and I know that personally, when I entered Women in Politics, I came from Women in Politics just because of a passion for politics and like wanting to be involved and, wanting to be informed. But I don't think people realize just how easy it is just to take action, even if you don't become involved in politics or don't necessarily pursue a career in politics. I think it's just super good to realize that you can make political change, even though you may not want to be involved in politics. But just going from that, I want to talk more about Senator Kaine's campaign and how you became involved with that, because he himself is a person that was not necessarily involved in politics, ran for office and won, and, won a very important seat in the Pennsylvania Senate. So can you tell me more about that and more about how his background, contributed to possibly him winning this seat?
Yeah, so I heard about the campaign via this campaign listserv that many campaign workers use. And I think that, John Kaine, not being traditional politician, not Democrat, really appealed to masses of people, like someone who comes from a working class background, who understands the struggles that what constituents are facing. That appealed a lot of people, I think.
Right. I think Americans are shifting to wanting, politicians that represent them, and at the end of the day are regular people, And I think John Kaine, just hearing of, I know our good friend Catherine, who's the co-executive producer, not producer, co-executive director at Women in Politics. She was personally, this is how we met Nancy, but she was involved with John Kaine's campaign. And just hearing from Catherine how immersive the experience was being able to campaign for him, and also just hearing about how like this unconventional politician went and won the seat. And you know, this was like massive for Pennsylvania. Like this was nationally impacted the nation. So I think it's super interesting to see how politics is shifting to not only like get people more involved, but get people running for office that wouldn't have otherwise, just regular people. And your job as I believe you work with the constituents. So is that getting, from what I understand, you're getting the feedback from, you know, the people that elected John Cain and giving that to him, to, you know, you're essentially working as a bridge between the people and John Cain, correct?
Yes. Yeah. People can reach out to us via like phone, email, and we do our best to address their concerns. And if a lot of people are reaching out about similar issues, for example, there is a campaign to save Chester Water Authority, we let John know. We have regular staff meetings, and we kind of give our briefings. Each department chair gives a briefing about what's going on, so like everyone can stay informed and that John can stay informed.
Yeah, so once again, she's getting people, you know, a pattern that I'm seeing with here is just like getting people involved in politics and becoming involved ourselves in politics is not that hard. And just thinking about your job, I always hear like call into your senator or send a letter to your senator, email your senator. And I feel like a lot of people don't do it, thinking that like our senators, our politicians are unreachable. But like you are proof that, you know, our politicians are there and they're listening and we're important to them and we have an impact.
Absolutely. If a lot of constituents band together and reach out, Senator John Cain will definitely know. And with any politician, if a group of constituents can get together and do outreach, whether it's like via phone or email, it will impact how they're going to decide on a certain issue or a legislative matter.
So how has it been like working directly with the people? I know you said that you ran for, as a candidate for the New Brunswick BOE, but your job now is on site, you know, on the field, working with your constituents. So what is that like?
Yeah, so I'm so grateful that I have the role that I do. I love that I am able to help people on a day-to-day basis. What is hard though is that at the moment, like since we are still in a global pandemic, a lot of people are struggling with a lot, and our department, we try our best to help them at the best that we can, but sometimes. It really goes up to like the federal level. For example, with unemployment, a lot of people have been struggling with unemployment. That is the number one issue that they reach out to us about, and there's only so much that we can do. But what we can do is we can reach out to the Pennsylvania Labor and Industry Department and try to work out like kinks in their application. But what we can't do is like expand the FPUC benefits or expand the programs like PUA or PUC.
I'm glad that you brought up how a lot of issues do go back to the federal level. And I think that's important to note for a lot of constituents, seeing how high up their issues go, how much impact their political activity has on their own lives. But I also like how you brought up how COVID has changed the political environment now, right? That's an interesting point, because I was wondering the same thing. We do see that a lot of people have, I guess, immersed themselves further into their own political opinions, you know, or develop new ones. But do you see any change in real political activity due to COVID?
Well, I know that a lot of like organizing has become remote, there are a lot more Zoom meetings. What I have seen among some political organizations, as well as some representatives, is engaging in mutual aid to make sure that the community is doing well. What is something that Representative Krajewski's office is going to start is they're going to start door knocking. They're going to start canvassing their constituents in West and Southwest Philly to help the elderly constituents get registered for vaccination appointments. And that's an idea that our office is currently considering as well. So, yes, a lot of our operations have moved remotely, but we're also trying to figure out how we can help our constituents in person as well.
This is kind of like off topic, but since we're on coronavirus, I'm genuinely curious, have you been getting a response from constituents regarding, I know that, you know, there is one thing that states can genuinely handle, which is how coronavirus restrictions are being implemented here in Texas. I'm from Texas. So here in Texas, there's been like big public outrage. And I'm imagining that whoever has your position for our state senators are hearing massive feedback from constituents saying, hey, we want a change in how coronavirus is being handled. But are you getting that same response in Pennsylvania as far as like loosening guidelines or like making them more strict?
Actually, not really. We've gotten a few constituents who've reached out about loosening regulations, but we've gotten more people reaching out alleging election fraud, actually. We still get a few people writing in now and then alleging election fraud and to investigate the 2020 elections.
That is crazy. I am shocked. I thought we had completely debunked election fraud rumors, but I guess not. That is insane to me that more people are concerned with election fraud. Didn't Sidney Powell go to court the other day for that, Dom V? Or am I remembering this incorrectly?
I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure there was, Nancy, I don't know if you know this. Oh, can y'all hear that?
No.
I don't hear anything.
I'm sorry, there was like a very loud noise in my room. But Sidney Powell was basically like spreading misinformation about election fraud and like talking about like the machines that they use, saying that they flipped. It was like a hardware system that was created in Venezuela to flip votes from Trump to Biden. And she went to court for this because she was spreading misinformation. I don't know exactly what she was charged with. I think it was undermining the election, but and her defense was that it was her opinion, but like she was spreading it like it was a fact. So that Nancy, what you talking about election fraud just reminded me of that.
Yeah. I also heard about the news yesterday, and I think I saw that she said that reasonable people wouldn't believe her past claims.
It's just kind of, it's ridiculous to me how this is still a situation that we're handling. But back to the topic at hand, which is your experience in being a woman in politics. Have you had any issues as a woman in politics, you know, regarding your sex, your gender? Have you faced any discrimination because of that? Or have you faced any like more difficulty getting into the field?
Absolutely. I don't think y'all are shocked to hear that. The very first time that I stepped into politics, I faced sexual harassment. There would be people in the political field, men, who would be mentors for my male counterparts in college, while they would flirt with me or while they would ask me out on dates. It was really discouraging at times. After one terrible interaction, I genuinely considered quitting politics, but But the women and the male allies that I have met have been great. And it's so important to surround yourself with women in the political world, because unfortunately it is still quite male dominated and it's still quite white. I also remember when I ran for office, when I was at one of the polling locations, one elderly white man held up a magazine with a woman of color on the magazine and said that I looked like her. That's just like one incident that I remember. Yeah, I feel like being a woman of color in this field can be really challenging, but it's so important that we are involved in politics and in government, because it's so important. And the incredible women that I have met in this field have been amazing, and I'm constantly rooting for them.
Andrea and I talk all the time about how both of us being women of color interested in politics is so important, because as women of color, we all have this super unique perspective on global affairs, on domestic affairs. And I don't think that's one that a lot of people can relate to. And seeing that we are a minority, it's our responsibility sometimes to speak up for those who really can't. So I'm glad that you brought that up. And I'm also glad that you brought up the so much harassment that goes on in politics. You know, as young as, I guess, in high school, Andrea and I are like constantly hearing stuff about how women are too emotional to be involved in politics, or we're just simply not taken seriously enough because we're young, we're women. I'm not sure if you know, but like on our Women in Politics Instagram, we always get comments from men about how they wouldn't listen to a woman. So I'm glad that you brought that up. That's not something that we talk about all the time because of the concentrated focus on the few women that we do have in politics.
Yeah, I think we, Domvi and I, have definitely experienced like our opinion, like our political opinions and our own thoughts and just our knowledge be undermined because of the fact that we're women, and just, and the fact that we are women of color. I think that plays a factor. And going back to the sexual harassment, I think this is an incredibly timely conversation to be having because of the whole 97% statistic that just was released and caused outrage everywhere, you know, because there were people that were like, oh, well, this statistic is fake and it's not real and it's not true. And then other people, you know, the more, I would say, sensible group of people were like, okay, yeah, it's not true, but there shouldn't be any women that are being sexually harassed, whether it be in their workplace, when they're working in politics by their boss. I think something else, Cuomo's sexual assault allegations, you know, him taking advantage of his position of power and you know, just calling his female workers pet names and touching them, you know, taking advantage of that, of being in that position, I just think is disgusting. And I think that's what we need to focus on when talking about, you know, that 97% statistic. That'll be our official, the breakdown addressing the 97% statistic controversy, because I think it's really important to talk about it, especially during Women's History Month and talking with such an amazing woman of color in politics.
Yeah, personally, I feel like that 97%, that's a correct statistic. I feel like every femme presenting person I know has been sexually harassed. And content warning, I'm going to bring up like sexual assault, but like some majority of my femme friends have experienced like sexual assault, which is a graver injustice. So I'm blown away that people don't believe the 97% statistic.
And I completely agree with you. And I think Honestly, I think that is also a manifestation, like it's also a manifestation of us not knowing how to define sexual assault or sexual harassment. Because, you know, I've had a lot of conversations with my friends and they'll bring something up and I'll say, that's not right. That's, you know, harassment. And they'll say it is. So, I mean, in my opinion, it might just be more than that. So I agree with you that it's such a common occurrence that it's so unjust.
Yeah, well, you said it was our duty, you know, as women of color to like talk about our opinions on how people of color are treated within the United States domestically, how we treat other nations. I'm from Venezuela, so like talking about how relations between the United States and Venezuela has been a big thing for me forever. It's how I got into politics. But I think also as women, we have that responsibility of talking about this because, you know, a lot of women don't know what classifies as sexual harassment or what is sexual assault. And I think a lot of people don't realize that they've gone through something like this until they talk to other people about it, other women. And I think it's just a sad reality because we've just kind of normalized it within our culture. So I think we're fulfilling our duty here today talking about this.
That was a sensitive topic. So I'm sorry to our viewers that may have been affected by this.
A sensitive but important topic. So I'm very sorry to our viewers.
And we're sorry to anyone who's part of that 97%. It is truly one of our biggest failures as a civilization that statistic even exists, that it's not 0%.
If I can jump in and add something, I also want to, you know, because of all these, the story that is happening with like Governor Cuomo, I think that if there is any man a powerful man in politics who has valid accusations against him, we need to hold him accountable. And it doesn't matter what his political affiliation or what his political ideology is. We have to hold him accountable. And if it's severe enough, I believe that we should remove predators like that from such spaces because if they cannot treat women or femme people like humans, they should not be occupying that space of power.
Right, that was perfectly said. People who abuse their power truly don't deserve it. And just to the point that a lot of people bring up about how people may lie about assault to gain fame, I guess, I don't think that's possible. I mean, If you really think about it, a lot of people are being defamed because they were brave enough to come out against Cuomo. And it takes a lot of courage to do that. It takes a lot of courage to speak up against an entire nation of people and about your experiences with a man with so much power. And I think instead of constantly doubting the many women or femme-presenting people who have been courageous enough to do something like that, I think it's time that we commend them.
Yes, for sure. And I guess just to bring this back full circle, at the end of the day, I think this all goes back to, you know, the general public's involvement in politics, because like you said, we have the power and we should hold Cuomo accountable because at the end of the day, he is an elected official, right? So he can be removed from office. And it is going back to our duty, our job as constituents. You know, I'm in Texas, but obviously Cuomo's constituents, to hold him accountable and, you know, rally together and be able to make that change. And you, Nancy, you know that it is possible for this to happen. You know, it is a possibility for people to rally and make change. And I just, one thing that I do really want to stress with this episode, if you're still listening now, is that I think our voice have a lot more impact than we think it do. I don't think our nation is perfect. Obviously, there are issues with voter suppression. and cases in which our voices are not heard. But I think it hurts more to just let this continue than to just be quiet about it. And I think it's possible to make change if we do come together and realize that we have an impact.
To add on that, I want to say a quote of Audre Lorde, who is someone that I look up to. She's this incredible Black queer feminist, but she said that, like, when we speak, like, we are afraid our words will not be heard nor welcome, but when we are silent, we are still afraid, so it is better to speak.
That is a beautiful quote that really ties. Wow, I think we might just title this episode the quote by Audre. It's Audre Lorde, right?
Yes, it's Audre Lorde, and she's incredible.
That is beautiful. I think that just might be our quote for this episode. But just to, I guess, to wrap things up, we've really come full circle. But something really interesting that Dongdi and I like to talk about, and I guess you have firsthand experience with, so you are the best person to be talking to us about this, is today's political environment. When I try to, like, assess how our government is doing, I try to think back to a moment in history where we were kind of in a similar situation, right? Because history repeats itself and we can learn from the past. And so the other day I was talking to Dongdi and I was trying to think, when was there a moment in time where we were like this? You know, there was kind of distrust of, like, experts. There was a general distrust of politicians and a general distrust of the system. And I don't think there was ever a time like this. And so we're truly in uncharted waters. Can you tell us how you are going through that as someone now in the political field, and how you're feeling the impact of that, of just not having an example, of kind of going in blind with this?
It's definitely unsettling. Our country is more politically divided than it ever has been historically. But I do think that there is also an opportunity to create comprehensive, like, intersectional change in this country. I have a lot of hope that our generations, the millennial and, like, Gen Z generation, that we can create a society that ancestors or predecessors could not have even imagined. So while these times have been at times very scary and dark, I think that this is also an opportunity to put together a society that we want.
Yeah, I completely agree. At the end of the day, it is up to us. But what do you think is our biggest obstacle in achieving that, in being the democratic republic that everyone's always dreamed of, where everyone gets representation and everyone can put together their ideal society?
I think our biggest obstacle is that I feel that a lot of people in modern society feel isolated from each other. So they feel like they're fighting this fight alone. But we have a lot more in common than what separates us. So to kind of, like, break that isolation and have these important, like, political conversations with people and getting involved in politically, whether it is whether it is canvassing for an official or a candidate, or it's getting involved in political nonprofits, that would be a whole game changer. So I think the biggest challenge, the biggest obstacle this country is facing right now, is that people don't realize that we have a lot more in common than we do.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, I know that question, that was a beautifully worded answer, and I don't know how to even follow that up. But for me, what I see too, you know, with this lack of unity as well, is the lack of representation. And we hear that all of the time, but it is so true. And I do not think that we can properly move towards change and like make sure that the change benefits everyone until we can all have equal representation in politics, whether that be having more women in politics, having more people of color in politics, or just making sure that everyone has a voice. I think that is also an obstacle that we certainly need to tackle to make sure that our future is bright.
Yeah, I completely agree, Andrea. And it makes you think, right? So thank you for that. I think finally, we'd like to end off with a question that we think only people like you can answer, people who have had firsthand experience in local politics more than anything. But today's political environment is pretty much defined by young people and you know, minorities spreading information and doing the best they can, especially considering the pandemic right now. There's not much that we can do. But what is the best way to make a true difference?
I think the best way to make a difference is to get connected with your neighborhood, honestly. Get connected with the neighborhood. If there is not a neighborhood group, create one and figure out like what your neighbors are going through. Figure out ways that y'all can take care of each other. And together, if y'all organize together, y'all can get a lot done on a local level. And then that the local level, by impacting the local level, that does influence other levels, like statewide, if that makes sense.
No, that's perfect. You're completely right. It all does start from the ground up. So I'm glad that you brought that up, because that's not something that we think about often. That's not something that we consider to be like true, right? I know a lot of people that I know, if you would ask them right now how the same question, they would probably say the best way to make a difference is probably to start with, you know, President Biden and the vice president. But I think you're completely right in that it starts from the neighborhood, and it starts locally. That is the most, well, to be completely frank, that is the most realistic way to make a difference too. You know, you can get a lot done locally.
Start small, baby steps.
Yeah.
And I think that you have just inspired me so much to go out and, because I feel like I ask myself, like, because Dami and I are involved in politics, obviously. We're involved with Women in Politics, our nonprofit organization, and we have this podcast. But I ask myself, like, how are we making a significant enough impact, you know? And I think after this episode, I'm going to find ways to get involved with some local politicians and try to go out there and make a difference, because, you think about it like inverted, you know, you think on a national level and you think all of these big things that you have to go and be defending policies when you can actually just start super small.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's all the questions we have for you.
Yes. Thank you so much. Okay. Nancy, you are in a position of honor because you are our first official guest that has a career in politics and obviously has an extensive background in politics. Not to hate on our other guests, we love our friends at Polititeen who came on for our last episode. If you haven't, or not our last episode, I think it was two episodes ago, so if you haven't listened to that episode, make sure you go listen to that. But Nancy, you are our first official like career political person, and we're so thankful. That was so badly worded, career political person. But you guys understand. So thank you so much. And I think we've had a very constructive conversation that will definitely help our audience. And I think it will definitely make an impact.
All right.
Of course. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on this podcast.
Of course. Thank you so much for coming. And I do agree with Andrea. We had one of the most productive conversations. And I think all of this is something that people need to hear. Do you have any last words for us?
Or our audience?
Audience, yeah.
Yeah, so if I mean, if you're a woman or a femme presenting person considering on getting involved, do it. And when you find your fellow, like when you make friends with your fellow woman or people of color in the same spaces, like do your best to support each other and uplift each other, because there are a lot of obstacles that are against us.
I really hope that's exactly what our future looks like. People supporting other people that look like them, or even people that don't look like them.
Everyone supporting everyone. That is what we want.
That future is closer than we think.
Yes. With that being said, I guess this is the end of the breakdown. You guys have an awesome rest of your day. Thank you for listening and getting to listen to our conversation today. And if you have anything, any feedback, anything you want to say from listening to this episode, make sure that you message us on Instagram, or you can email us at our podcast email, which is thebreakdown@gmail.com. Or I think it's womeninpoliticsthebreakdown@gmail.com. Or if I said that wrong, you can find it in our Spotify bio. That being said, thank you guys. See you next time on The Breakdown.
Bye.
Bye.